This episode of the Major Spoilers podcast goes out to Lisa Tenenbaum,
Elaine,
Jason Kyle Levick,
and Hunter. Join these great people who are keeping shows like the Major Spoilers podcast going week after week. You can find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comics fans.
In this issue, once more unto the breach that is Amalgam with Spider-Boy and the Legends of the Dark Claw, Batman and Wolverine, what could possibly go wrong there? Plus, the Battle of the Covers, Big Trouble, Hyborians and Amazons in Eternity, oh my, plus the Kick Butt Poll of the Week. The subtleties may strangle you, but we can explain what you can't explain. Just a little insight will make it right. MSPs tonight. MSPs tonight.
Welcome to Major Spoilers Podcast 751. I almost said welcome to Action Comics 1000, but that's a ways down the road.
And also not us, dude.
Well, I don't know about that. It does bring up a good question, though. I don't know if this came up during a dueling review podcast or something. We were reviewing a DC comic book, and it seems like DC lately has been doing a lot of things that are, how does this fit into a continuity? And we've kind of talked that DC kind of just wants to throw continuity out of the window. But some of these stories feel like, and I've heard other people talk about these without my input at all, where people are like, this is an Elseworlds title, but it doesn't have Elseworlds on the cover. And it got me wondering, is DC afraid of using the Elseworlds logo? Or using that, yes, that idea? Why?
Well, we've you know, I feel like, and when I say we, I mean the greater we in the comic book industry, we have been conditioned to believe that there is prime continuity, and then there's other stuff, and we have been conditioned through ultimatums. We have been conditioned through white events. We have been conditioned through the literal destruction of every alternate reality, future tale, every, you know, Earth 2, every Earth 5. All of these things don't matter. And the reason I can tell you this is because they all end with those characters being decimated and the worlds being destroyed and everybody dying screaming. It's that what if model. If you take a story like, say, Batman, DC, Apocalypse, Flying, Metal, whatever
the
it's
one
called.
That, no, the one that brought up this conversation originally, Matthew, was Batman White Knight, where the Joker becomes sane.
All right, so we're talking about your Batman White Knight. If you put an Elseworlds on that title, it does two things. One, Elseworlds, and I share this, but I believe that DC believes that Elseworlds has a retro 90s kind of branding to it. Calling something an Elseworlds is almost the equivalent of calling it a, quote, imaginary story from the 1960s. Elseworlds is considered old and busted, whereas your new modern storytelling thing, and we've seen this before, too, we're at a point where, for now, the continuity isn't as important as let's tell this kick butt story. So by not calling it an Elseworlds, you're not making it feel retro. You're not making it feel old and busted. You're not making people think back to Batman as Green Lantern, Batman as Superman, and God help us, Batman the Nail and another the Nail. But secondly, by not calling it an Elseworlds, by not saying this is an alternate reality, you can cut off the mentality that alternate reality, oh, well, this won't matter. This will get shipped off to the wayside, or everybody will get murdered, or that Earth will show up in a Grant Morrison story long enough to be eaten by the gentry or destroyed by Bizarro, or you know, it'll burst into flame. If it's a Geoff Johns story, it'll be stabbed from off panel by from behind by a strange creature, which then takes over the world. But if you can stay away from calling it an Elseworlds, you can keep people from saying it doesn't matter as much or it's not as important because it's not the quote unquote real DC universe or the real Marvel universe or the real Dark Horse or whatever you're reading.
What do you think there, Rodrigo?
Yeah, I think he's exactly right. And I think a big part of it is that, you know, probably without really meaning to, Elseworlds was the line itself was part of that conditioning. You know, for me, I'm the opposite of what Matthew just described. And I think most of us on this podcast are willing to give a story a shot, you know, regardless of where it comes from or how it fits into continuity or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for me, I'm usually looking for Elseworld stuff because most of the time I don't like the business as usual way that, you know, superheroes are done. I will say that a lot of the time I got kind of tired with What If because it is always just like crap sack at the end, right? It's just like
everybody dies.
And everybody dies except that one time when one guy didn't die and that was somehow sadder. Yeah, I think, you know, if you recall, there have been lots of things like your fifth week experiments, the DC alternate stuff.
The tangent stuff.
Yep, tangent stuff, like the flashbacks. You guys remember Marvel flashbacks where like we're going to do
one issue.
Yeah, we're going to do this like flashback thing of your favorite comics. Those comics most of the time didn't sell because people were like, oh, good, I can skip this month, you know, like seriously, people, there are kind of these two types of comic book nerds. One type, which is just kind of like looking for stories and maybe looking for particular things that they like, and it doesn't really matter where they come from. And then there's like the continuity people, and the continuity people do like get pretty bristly when somebody brings up something that isn't in the canon. And that's because keeping up with the continuity is a ton of work. Yes. I kind of understand, like, I don't particularly like the attitude of somebody who is like, well, actually, that has been erased by this and that, or actually, that was an imaginary story to begin with, or whatever. Like, it can be annoying in a conversation where you're just kind of like talking about Batman, right? But I also understand that feeling of I don't know, maybe not propriety, but like that feeling that it belongs to them, because keeping up with that stuff is right. Just so difficult and tedious sometimes. It's like, I am doing the work and I understand where Spider-Man comes from. Dang it. Carnage never took over the Silver Surfer.
Right.
Ashley, you have some thoughts, because I'm like Rodrigo. I enjoy the Elseworlds, and I think Elseworlds, for what it was popular enough that DC kept it going for years and years and years and years. I don't think by putting it back, it would turn people off. I think actually people would see Elseworlds and go, hey, I remember that. Let's check out some of these crazy stories that they're telling now.
I don't know. It's hard enough now. For the same reason that I stated why I never had a pull list until I started working at a comic book store, it's hard enough to convince people to spend $2.99, $3.99, $4.99, $5.99 on less than 25 pages of content. And for something that's not an ongoing narrative that you have no guarantee is going to be good, that if you didn't read before, you have no sure in with, I think that's a tough proposition. And I think... I think DC has trouble when they do standalone series, with the exception of something like All-Star Batman. And I think that's why all of it matters, because none of it matters, because it's all in continuity right now. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think the only place we're going to see a return to something like an Elseworlds branded as a one-off that is not going to affect overall continuity, really excelling, is in the digital first comics. But those aren't the kind of risks that DC wants to take there.
But I mean, and I guess even if they don't put the Elseworlds on the cover, Batman, mm-hmm. White Knight, Bombshells, you know, those are all alternate reality or alternate timeline stories.
They're partakes, mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
And
but
we've
so
even
is
got
the
we've
Suicide
even,
Squad movie.
Yeah. Well, we've even got the in the DC animated universe, the next movie that's coming out. I mean, they just released the Batman 66 meets Two-Face movie. But the movie that's coming out next is Gotham by Gaslight in animated form. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're already doing it. The only thing that they're not doing is putting the Elseworlds on there. And, you know, as I said a minute ago, I really think you slap that little starburst on there And there would be a lot of people who would be like, oh, man, I remember Elseworlds. This is now something I can understand if it's got that on there. And White Knight then suddenly makes sense, or Bombshells makes a lot of sense, or, you know, Gotham Garage suddenly makes a lot of sense.
I don't think that people are confused by that. And I honestly don't think that there are as many readers of our genre, of our age and recognition, who are going to look back at Elseworlds and go, that's a super neat thing. Because it, in a lot of ways, labeling a book as an Elseworlds is not tantamount to, certainly not equivalent to, but kind of in the same vein as if you referred to the sidekick just out of the blue as my second favorite son.
Never out of the blue. I say that all the time.
That's the thing.
Directly to him every day.
Exactly. You're my second favorite.
You're my second favorite son. And if the other doesn't survive, then you're my last chance. No, but I think that if you say that, you have set up an expectation that there's prime continuity and then there's something else. There's this thing that is separate and distinct. And I think what DC is trying to get away from, and you and I and Rodrigo at the very least, and I'm not sure if Ashley was around at that vintage as well, we very much were behind the F continuity movement a few years ago, where DC was like, we're going to throw aside all of this, you know, all this crazy stuff, and we're going to do convergence, and we're going to do a multiversity, and we're going to do all these things that are kind of treading on the same turf, and in some cases having the same alternate worlds, but they're different, the same alternate worlds. And I'm really sort of fine with that, because the Elseworlds branding was important in 1987, because in 1987, we, the readers of 1987, we were not yet conditioned to be able to accept say Jay Garrick as a legitimate Flash. The Earth 2 Flash was treated as a second stringer because that you had your Barry Allen, or at that point you had your dead Barry Allen and your new young Wally West. And those alternate realities had been either downplayed or imaginary stories, or they were out of fashion because they were, you know, old fashioned. And the Elseworlds kind of gave it a prestige. Literally, it was prestige format.
Oh yeah, they were all prestige format.
Yeah, it gave it a prestige. It gave it a shine that wasn't just, hey, guys, remember when Superman was Superman Red and Superman Blue and that goofy thing in the 60s? Well, this is like that, only it's making, you know, definite sociopolitical commentary and talking about Sir Thomas More and the formation of the Anglican Church. And also Batman is a priest. And you go into that and you're like, okay, I feel that. But now, I also think that we have finally, oh, I have thought and hoped and wished for this day. We've reached a point where Marvel is okay with more than one take on Spider-Man, sometimes in the same month, sometimes in the same book. DC is able to give us a square-jawed Dark Knight who has to climb higher because the blood is flooding his chest cavity. And also a square-jawed smiling Avenger who can come out during the day and work with, you know, Batman and Aquaman and do all the things that he does in, say, The Brave and the Bold, or the Batman that we saw in Justice League Unlimited, or the Batman that we see where Ben Affleck always looks like he's taking a dump. All of those Batmen exist simultaneously, and people understand it. Audiences are fine with that. The audiences gravitate to the Batman that they want, and DC gives you a choice of Batman, gives you a choice of whether you want to see wacky, crazy Harley Quinn bopping people on the head in Suicide Squad, or cool Harley Quinn doing her thing in Bombshells, or weird steampunk Harley Quinn doing whatever weird steampunk Harley Quinn does. And I think that to use the Elseworlds in that type of setting is a little counterproductive, I think, to what they're doing, because right now it feels like for the first time in a very long time, the books that are coming out don't feel like we have our top tier real capital R air quotes comics that are Earth 616 or DCU Prime Earth. And then all this other whack jobbery that kind of dances around the edges. It really feels like there is a spectrum of titles, a spectrum of takes on the same characters, and a spectrum of things all coming out at once. And if you enjoy it, you can read it. And if you don't enjoy it, you could go and find a different take and read it. And I feel like they're not so much afraid as Elseworlds as they've, they are afraid of it because they've outgrown it.
Maybe. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about what DC is doing because I do enjoy that. And even when they were doing stuff a few years ago, I dropped a couple of titles because it's like, well, I don't like reading this character in this way, and I will read this character in this way that I enjoy. So I'm not complaining about that. I was just wondering, because it's so obvious a lot of this stuff isn't in the same universe or the same timeline, why they are scared of that. I'm going to make a kind of a prediction here. Marvel has switched, and we should have talked about Marvel Legacy last week, but Marvel has just jumped back into Marvel, their whole Marvel Legacy, embracing the old numbering ways. I'm going to bet that within not this year, I want to say 2 or 3 years.
They're real generous with how high they think their numbers are, too, considering how long they started after DC.
I know. But remember, Amazing Spider-Man was coming out 3 times a month. So I'm going to make a prediction.
And I know that they're counting various titles there as well, but it just seems suspiciously high.
And Captain America's numbers count a full 90 issues of Tales of Suspense that he did not appear in.
And that's also important. Thor counts the 7 issues that he didn't appear in.
The first 87 issues of Journey into Mystery. Yep. That's cheating. They're wrong and they're bad.
I'm going to make a prediction that within the next 3 years, Marvel will bring back, even if it's for a short run, What If. And then DC.
Are they bringing back another old title?
They're probably bringing back a lot of old titles, but when it comes to
2-in-1 or team up or
yeah, the Marvel 2-in-1.
Yeah, 2-in-1. Yeah.
Something else that none of us want. We just want Fantastic Four back. Please give us Fantastic Four. I guess I'll read the Terrifics. Great. Thanks, DC.
Yeah.
I would prefer to read Marvel 2-in-1, but I am a freak who has a complete run of Marvel 2-in-1. And, you know, it's me and a guy named Dave who have complete runs of Marvel 2-in-1. But yeah, I too want a Fantastic Four book back. What are you doing, Marvel?
I'm just saying that within 3 years, Marvel will bring back a What If run. And then suddenly people will be saying, why isn't DC doing an Elseworlds series?
And then people will say, because Elseworlds is dumb. Because that's what people say on the internet. You say, hey, have you heard about comics? And they're like, yeah, I like these. Everything else is lol fail.
I will bet that the What If will come back and everyone will be going, this is great. And then they'll look at DC and then DC will say, what? But I guarantee you that's what's going to happen.
I'm taking this bet. It is now 10/24/2017. I will give you until 10/24 of 2020.
If you're still around.
All right.
Yeah. Okay.
Stephen Francis Schleicher.
Just saying.
Stephen Francis Schleicher, what did I say to you about wishing me dead?
I didn't say I wished you dead. If I wanted to say I wish you dead, I would say I wish you would just die. But I've never said that, nor would I ever say
that. You never said it.
Nope, I would never even think that either.
Okay. Well, I stop
Rodrigo
on
the
cornfield, too. Rodrigo's going to live forever. Rodrigo is like a living beard powered by hatred and cheeseburgers.
Do you have any final human being. Rodrigo, do you have any final thoughts on this Elseworlds? Is it too dated? Just move on. Forget about it. It'll never happen.
I mean, it is interesting that. Here are my thoughts. A lot of the stuff that people like about insert popular comic book hero here actually comes from imaginary stories and mm-hmm. Elseworlds and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like Dark Knight Returns was for all intents and purposes an Elseworlds story.
Right.
The Killing Joke, mm-hmm. originally an Elseworlds story, now horrendously brought into continuity sometimes. things like that. Right now I'm 3 episodes into The Gifted and Blink is there, and Blink came from this weird alternate reality nonsense that I loved back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, obviously the companies understand that these alternate takes on characters are good, so it doesn't or ultimately enrich the characters. But it really doesn't matter how they go about it, whether they label it as Elseworlds or What If or an imaginary story or whatever, or if they're just like, oh, this is Batman year 3 where everything was like really crazy because the Batmite was around. And it's like, this doesn't fit into Batman year 1 or 2. It's like, doesn't matter. Just roll with it.
Just like, wing that mother.
Yeah, exactly. So it doesn't really matter how they do it, as long as they are maintaining sort of these like weird little pools where creators are allowed to play with the characters. That's all that really matters.
Ashley, some final thoughts?
Elseworlds are cool. They should bring them back. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because everything is in continuity.
Everything is in continuity, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And it can certainly be in continuity Batman if it is an Elseworlds. Even if it is a continuity that's in a different world.
The one where Batman pees himself.
Oh, yes, just a little bit. A little drop came out.
There's nothing wrong with that story. He was attempting to humanize the character, and he did it in a ham-fisted, vulgar, coarse Kevin Smith kind of way. And it's not necessarily convergent with a lot of the Batman that we like, but it does make Bruce Wayne seem more human and more fallible than say, I can't armor my head.
It is funny, though, that they are trying to, like, reconcile both of those, right? The Batman that, like, went a little bit overboard with the lighter fluid and kind of peed himself a little bit with the Batman that doesn't sit down.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ever.
Ashley, you've got a couple of comics coming out that people need to order, like, right now if they want to get them in January.
Yeah, ma'am. Final order cutoff is right around the corner on one of these, and still right around the corner for the other one. The If Anthology, which Jason Inman and I were part of last year, is coming out again the first Wednesday of November, which is like tomorrow. So you're definitely going to want to pick it up. If you read last year's story about Captain Terrific, he returns in this year's story. It is called Thief. It is all the same team. Nick Robles is joining us again on art, Taylor Esposito on letters, and we continue another story in that world. It'd be amazing if you went to your comic shop and told them that you wanted that. And while you're there supporting your local comic shop and your local podcaster, writer person, you could also tell them that you wanted to pull Jupiter Jet, because Jupiter Jet number one comes out on December 6th, which is the first Wednesday in December. I got your first Wednesdays covered for like the next 6 months, guys. You just have to trust me on this.
Yeah, when I turned in my comic book order on Sunday, and I said, hey, look, Jupiter Jet comes out, and just put it on my pull list for the entire run of the series, which I think is how many issues? Six?
Five, and then
five.
A trade.
Okay. And I also said, hey, when that final issue comes out, keep it on my pull list, because I have a feeling there will be a second series after that.
I really hope so. That's the best thing that could happen, would be if we could tell more stories. And if you're not sure how to order through previews, I know that can be big and scary. Jason Inman and myself and the official Jupiter Jet Twitter at Jupiter Jet Comic have a really cool little order form pinned to the top of the Twitter. You can literally just print that out, write your name on it, and give it to your retailer.
Yep, that's the easiest way to do it. Yeah. All right. Listeners, you can head over to majorspoilers.com. And you can share your thoughts on this DC's comments that we've talked about, read a bunch of other things. And you can also check out some reviews over at Major Spoilers. Let us jump into that right now.
Reviews.
This week, I'm taking a look at Big Trouble in Little China, Old Man Jack number 2. Now, this takes place at a point where Jack Burton is old. He's defeated Lo Pan. He accidentally set the God of the East out, apparently in the last series. And Jack was given a nice, cushy, like, afterlife while the rest of the world turned into hellpocalypse. And Jack has been drawn out of his paradise to unwittingly save David Lo Pan, because David Lo Pan has also been cast aside by the giant god. And David Lo Pan has an idea of how he can restore order back to Earth. But the only way he can do it is if he and Jack team up. And Jack wants nothing to do with that because he was drawn out of paradise with the promise that there was a beautiful blonde waiting for him. Of course, it was all David Lo Pan goofing around. But as he's turning his back on David Lo Pan in this issue, he comes across a tribe of humans that have not been taken up by one of the devils or sent to one of the many hells that are out there. And they welcome him with open arms and think that he's great, until word comes from their higher up that he is actually the one that brought about this hellscape. And he's about ready to be cast into a giant pit, which is basically a giant face that's not going to eat him. It's a giant face in the ground that's just going to chew him up and spit him out, because, you know, that's the kind of hellscape that we're in. And then David Lopan comes and saves Jack. So they're kind of, they kind of owe each other a favor. And this issue ends with them, I guess, going to drive through the flames that are the middle of the United States and try to get back in and bring down the God of the East to restore order back to Earth. It is an interesting story. I mean, John Carpenter is listed as one of the writers on this. I'm sure he just had some kind of a overall approval since he's the creator of the Big Trouble in Little China series. But Anthony Birch and Jorge Corona do a great job of trying to bring the swagger and the attitude of Jack Burton into the comic books. The first issue, I don't think they did as good a job as what happened in this second issue. But it's a really solid story. And if you're needing a fix of some Big Trouble in Little China stuff while you're waiting for word of a remake or a sequel or whatever it is, and you kind of like the Logan movie, this one might have something for you. The art is good. The story is good. I say go pick it up and check it out. It's issue number two. Issue number one should still be available from Boom Studios. But I'm giving it 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5.
Can I plug real quick that if you like Jorge Corona's art, he draws our backup in Jupiter Jet. So buy it only for that.
See, there you go. Right there.
Synergy.
All right about there. Me, guys. It's yes. All about me.
Oh, I'm going to rename this episode. It's all about Ashley. Matthew, why don't you share your title this week, please?
All right. My title is Monsignor. No, that's offensive. I prefer to be called Galactic President Superstar McAwesomeville. But my comic book title that I'm reviewing is Dark Horse Comics and DC Comics Working Together on the Wonder That Is Wonder Woman Conan, number 2, I believe of 6, if I'm not mistaken. So the cover of this issue is Aaron Lopresti's work, and Lopresti is awesome. I love his work. Actually, no, it's somebody different, but that's not the point either. It's Wonder Woman and Conan in the ocean, about to beat up some sharks. That is super cool. I will tell you that both of the covers to this book are beautiful, and they are not entirely representative of the actual events within the book, but that's okay because they're so beautiful and they're so cool and they're so evocative. Essentially, what this story posits is somehow in a weird kind of composite world, somewhere in Sumeria, baby Conan, who's all of 10 years old, started interacting with another tribe of Amazons, and they had a baby Wonder Woman. And baby Wonder Woman and baby Conan kind of grew up in and around each other and showed off for each other. And now that they're grown up, they've both been captured by evil, evil, evil schmuckers. And throughout this issue, there's this weird kind of awesome, almost a Defiant Ones riff, where they've both been captured and they're chained together and they're forced to fight for other people's amusement. And then at one point they refuse to murder each other. So they get sold off to pirates and they spend the second half of the issue on a pirate ship under the thumb of evil pirates, if you will. And throughout this whole issue, it's just this kind of perfect synthesis of Wonder Woman backstory and a Robert E. Howard tale. And it's fascinating to me to see how well this all comes together. And of course, this is written by Gail Simone, who has written both characters, I believe. And I know certainly did an extensive run on Red Sonja, who does get name-checked or referenced in this issue. And it does have one of the coolest endings ever, where Conan and Diana are on a ship and she's like, "Do you trust me?" He's like, "Not even a little." And she dives into the ocean and Conan is like, this Athena god must be impressive. And then he realizes he's still chained to her and gets dragged over the side into the ocean to die. But it's a really, really cool moment and a book full of those cool moments. Really, really well drawn. I like it when you have something that kind of tries to take superhero stuff like Wonder Woman's costume, but puts it in the book in such a way that it makes sense. She doesn't actually wear her uniform, but everything that she is wearing in this is Conan appropriate and evokes the Wonder Woman uniform that we know. I want to go with 3.5 slices of meatloaf for Wonder Woman Conan number 2. Well above average on the book. I'm going to go back and try and find number 1 at this point. And I'm probably on board for the full 6 because this is fun.
Cool. In fact, you probably have the first issue because I shared it with you when it first came out.
Probably shared it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a good series.
Was it good? Was it awesome?
It was really awesome.
Here's the cool thing. This is what I think is happening is DC and Dynamite have teamed up for their Shadow series. So first it was Batman in the Shadow over at DC Comics, and now Dynamite is doing the Shadow and Batman. And I have a feeling that we're getting Wonder Woman Conan from DC Comics. And then after this run is over, we'll get a Dark Horse Conan Wonder Woman run as well.
You know what I'm hoping we get from Dark Horse? Superman Usagi Yojimbo.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
Why not?
It just doesn't seem like something DC would want to do.
Oh, but Superman, you're mean.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Would you love it if they called it an Elseworlds?
Maybe.
All right.
Rodrigo, tell us about Eternity Number 1 from Image Comics.
Eternity Number 1. It's Valiant.
Valiant, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt Kent, yep.
Eternity Number 1.
Number one.
It was, unbeknownst to me, a continuation of a different ongoing comic, so I was mega confused. this is spiraling out of their Divinity comic, which I have not read. Eternity Number 1 is... I would describe as a series of very cool looking images bombarding my face, and then a baby gets stolen. Is kind of what happens here. I'm not entirely sure what's going on, but the art looks great, and I'm sure if I had been following the comic that this comes from, this would make a lot more sense. I believe that the guy known as Divinity is this astronaut or cosmonaut who lives with his family, and then some space aliens steal his baby, and there's this like creepy cult that wants him to be like their messiah, but he's like, no thanks, and then they get mad at him.
Wait, does he have like a red mohawk?
Yeah, he has like a real kind of Adam Strange thing going. He's got a mohawk and like a tube that comes from his shoulder to his back, and
yeah, lots of tubes. He's kind of cool looking.
Yeah, it's like his costume is kind of like if you took Adam Strange and mixed him up with Omega Red. It's kind of what he looks like. But like I said, the art looks really good. Lots of like big cosmic scapes, lots of weird aliens, like big colorful panoramas of alien weirdness. The solicitation, which again, I didn't read ahead of time. I was just like, ooh, a number one comic. I'll read this. Let that be a lesson to me. Says that it's in the tradition of Kirby and Mobius. So, Mobius.
You guys are so cute.
Merbliers.
Mobius.
Mobius the science.
It is from the French, Mobius.
Sure. Like, there is some clear, M guy influences here. There's one particular sort of like, you know, it's like there's like a tower and people are climbing it, and there's like fingers coming out of the ground, and there's all these planets, and I'm like, yeah, that seems like something that I would have seen in that comic. It is not bad, but again, I'm just, you know, kind of jumping into it in the middle and didn't really have time to pick up anything else. So I'm going to give this 2.5 slices of meatloaf. So feel free to correct up or down based on whether you've read the comic or not. But yeah, definitely. I mean, just the art is worth leafing through it. If not, I don't know, picking it up.
Nice.
Okay. Ashley, what do you have for us this week?
Oh, man, I have another Archie comic because I couldn't get enough talking about it last week.
All right.
So, as with all Archie comics, we seem to do these one-shots, and then when they do really good, we make them into a series. And I like that because it's a very egalitarian way to create a publishing schedule. But it means that sometimes this issue comes out like a year ago, and then they basically reprint it in order to launch a new number one.
Mm-hmm.
So Jughead the Hunger, number one, is in the same vein as Chilling Adventures of Sabrina or Your Afterlife with Archie, except hopefully it comes out on a more regular basis than the aforementioned cover, or series, rather. In this series, of course, Mr. Jughead Jones is the feature. And I think they do a really good job in the opening sequence of showing you a horrific murder. And even though the book is called Jughead, maybe leaving you to decide exactly how bad he is and exactly how involved he might be in it. Given the fact that this is out in the world and everyone already knows he's a werewolf, I'm just going to tell you, also it's at the solicit, that he's a werewolf. And my favorite thing, I know, giant spoiler. My favorite thing is that the title of the book is Jughead the Hunger, and the entire premise of his lycanthropy is basically how hungry is he and how close is he to the moon? And it leads to the death of a couple beloved characters and my most hated character, which is really deeply satisfying on a level that I didn't expect. It's also with the solicit, so if you don't want to know who that giant murderized person is at the end, I would recommend not reading the solicit and going in sight unseen. The murder of this person leads the family of werewolf hunters, I'm so sorry, whose last name happened to be Cooper, to come out of the woodwork and for Jughead and Archie to get really upset that their friendship with Betty was all a giant lie because she just wants to murder the kid with the big nose. But because they were friends and they do have feelings for each other, it's, again, this Archie trope of three teenage kids deciding how they're able to relate to each other and whether or not they can be there to emotionally support each other through the trials that they're going to. In this case, they just happen to be really, really bloody and really, really vile. I think Frank Thierry, who's writing this, has done a great job at having an acceptable horror element so that it does feel of a piece with the stories that have come before it. It is very adult. It is not for your children. This is no Archie's Weird Mysteries circa 2003. Because Pat Kennedy's art really runs away with some of the gore, but that's what makes it a really great read. If you were old enough to have watched Archie's Weird Mysteries in 2003, this series is going to be amazing based off of this first one shot. If you like anything about Archie, if you like Riverdale, I would highly recommend picking it up and then reading the rest of the series. I'm going to give it 5 out of 5. More Jughead the Hunger, please. I'm hungry for it like a wolf.
I see what you did there.
I was proud of that one.
All right. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Rodrigo. Thank you, Matthew, for your reviews. Listeners, as I said, you can head over to majorspoilers.com and you can check out more reviews over there. You can also check out the Major Spoilers poll of the week.
Week.
Been thinking about comic book covers lately, and some of them each week I kind of look forward to seeing, you know, what are the publishers doing to try to entice me to pick up their book. And it got me thinking, you know, what are some of the best comic book covers out there? And there are a lot of them, but we're only going to do two this week. And so two comics that I picked this week, Crisis on Infinite Earths, issue number 7. That's the Death of Supergirl. It has Superman standing there on the cover holding a dead Supergirl while everyone looks on. And the other one is the Dark Knight Returns, number 1. It's the one that has the lightning bolt in the sky and the silhouette of Batman jumping across and leaping into battle. And so the question this week for each of you is, which cover do you like most? Why don't we start with Rodrigo?
Okay, well, for me, I think, so obviously the Batman, the Dark Knight Returns cover is really iconic, but to me, it like very much encapsulates the Dark Knight Returns, and not necessarily in a good way. It's really the like clenched fist and then other fit, like extended hand kind of thing is like, lightning bolt, this is gonna hit you over the head so hard with all of its themes, you're not gonna you're not going to recover from it. You know, Crisis on Infinite Earths is dense and difficult to get through, but this is, you know, a great cover. It's just, there's so much to look at. You know, all the little superheroes are there, except for the big ones who, you know, can change size. And this is a cover that has been, obviously both of these covers have been, you know, copied and spoofed and so on and so forth. But for my money, I think Crisis on Infinite Earths is, like, really conveys a serious tone in what is otherwise a bunch of people wearing, you know, wacky tights. Whereas the Batman the Dark Knight is kind of like, from the get-go, it's like, this comic takes itself too seriously.
Mm. Okay. Ashley, what about you? Which one do you like most?
Well, there's one of these series that I think is barely readable, and there's one that I don't like at all. So I'm going to go with the Supergirl cover.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Matthew?
There is an enjoyably minimalist aspect to Legends of the Dark Knight, number one, or The Dark Knight Returns, number one, I guess I should say, that is remarkably restrained, especially given the fact that its creator is not that. And I feel like that just that stark image where you can see everything you need to see, you see the scalloped cape, you see the bladed gloves, you see the pointy-eared cowl, and you have that just that lightning bolt in the background and the heavy contrast. It's really beautiful. It really is an iconic moment. But I can tell you in three words why Crisis on Infinite Earths number 7 is better. And those words are George Perez, biatch.
I have written down right here, Matthew, right here, since I posted this up, my answer that Matthew was going to say, and it says Matthew will like this cover just for George Perez.
George Perez.
A completely good reason to like something.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
You know what? You know what's best about this cover, though? When you look at it, do you realize that on that cover you can actually look and see the Phantom Stranger, you can see Barry Allen, you can identify Cole, Captain Marvel, The Question, The Losers, Sergeant Rock, The Blue Devil, Jonah Hex, you can see Gypsy. You can look at this cover and people are like, this beautiful image of, you know, the Michelangelo riff with poor Supergirl ripped to shreds, and you can say there's Blue Beetle. And there's the Challengers of the Unknown. This is a moment where all of the characters are identifiable and they're all in the background grayscale. Jason Todd is very visible. If you look right behind Supergirl's her right elbow, Jason Todd is standing there all sad going, I'm going to be dead soon too. But it's just such a perfect encapsulation of what the Crisis on Infinite Earths was. And it's beautifully drawn, man.
Oh yeah,
plus,
no.
Superman's crying.
The thing is, there is nothing wrong with anyone picking either one of these, because you know, they're both super iconic, right? I mean, Crisis on Infinite Earths draws its inspiration directly from Michelangelo, right? The thing that makes me pick The Dark Knight Returns is, as what you had said, Matthew, is it is so minimalist in what that image is, right? That silhouette
it's stark and beautiful.
Yeah, it could be anyone except that, because the lightning is illuminating the character and silhouetting him, and we see the bat ears and the cape and the little spikes on the gloves, we know that it's Batman. So even if there was no title on this, you would say, oh my gosh, is this a Batman book? This is really catching. What is this? Crisis on Infinite Earths is really cool because it is cramming like every superhero that's in this series in there, right? And it's really good. And it's got a sad moment. It's also got this huge spoiler moment, right, about what's going on in this book. But I went with the Dark Knight Returns because of its minimalist impact and the fact that, as everyone said, it's being copied left and right. We don't see as many copies of the Crisis on Infinite Earths cover as much lately, because so many people call it out. But like this week, WWE number, what is it, 11? Whatever the new WWE comic from Boom Studios coming out this week is totally riffing on the Dark Knight Returns cover. And I don't know who the guy is. I'm sorry, it's WWE number 10. I don't know who the guy is jumping on the cover. Is it...
What's he look like?
I don't know. Looks like
has
a guy.
Has he got a hat?
No. He's got long hair and he's got a beard goatee thing. He's dressed in black.
Roman Reigns.
Oh, okay.
Is it Roman Reigns or is it CrossFit Jesus?
Well, it could be either. But I don't think CrossFit Jesus wears army boots. I think he wears sandals.
Actually,
kind of his thing.
He does. Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins were both a part of the Shield. Mm. Does he have a massive tribal tattoo?
Yeah, no, Rodrigo's right. It's Roman Reigns because he's mentioned in the solicitation. But, you know, they're just grabbing that.
A Superman punch that actually looks like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really cool to just kind of flip back and forth between those two and say, oh, yeah, I can see where they drew some inspiration from, you know, getting those kinds of things. And it's something that looks great on a t-shirt. It's something that looks great on, you know, a window sticker or something like that, because you can keep that design super, super simple. This is a hard choice, I'll be honest, because both of these are great covers. And the ones that I've coming up are going to be, I think, just as tough and as difficult, because they're all classic covers. They're all these iconic moments that we know and love from, you know, decades of comic reading and stuff that hits us in our, you know, our consciousness, pop culture consciousness. That's just out there. Let's see. Joe says, I think it's Joe. I voted for Crisis cover. It's way cool. And it tells a story. And I remember that when it came out, I was actually shocked and surprised, says Joe. The Dark Knight cover is simple, streamlined, eye-catching, and dramatic. It's a modern masterpiece of original composition that doesn't need to rely upon copying past tropes like the Michelangelo, the Pieta, for inspiration. Mm-hmm. And then Daniel goes on to say, and the Crisis cover is not even an original composition from a comic book cover of its era. So it just kind of rips apart that one. But he does give some praise and votes for the Dark Knight cover. Matthew says, I think your example is Batman 1566. Robin dies at dawn from way back in 63. Although I don't think it was issue 1566.
Oh, okay. I may have mistyped it.
Okay.
Yeah, Batman 156.
Yeah, where Robin dies at dawn. Yeah.
Right. And it turns out Batman's actually not on Mars.
No, spoilers. He's not. It's a made up story. Okay, Matthew. So how has everyone voted this week?
What?
How has everyone voted this week?
Comics are made up?
No, it's a made up story. It's a $1 million industry, billion-dollar industry, depending on whose numbers you're going from.
I wish. I really, really wish.
42% of our faithful spoilerites are voting The Dark Knight Returns based on that cool minimalist Stark, and 58% are correctly choosing Crisis.
No. There's Matthew. For someone who goes on and on each week about anyone can enjoy what they like, that is not a nice comment. Because, and that's specifically why I phrased the question is, which one do you like most? It's not saying which one is the best cover. It's like, which one do you like the most?
That is the one that I like most. So it is, in fact, the correct answer. But yes, 50%, or about a 3-2 split. And also, again, as we have noted, sometimes when we get to do the podcast, there aren't a whole lot of votes in the bag. So 5 votes either direction could swing this thing back to The Dark Knight Returns, which is important because, as we've mentioned repeatedly, he can't armor his head. He needs the votes, you guys.
Well, I mean, if that's the one you like the most, then that's the one you like the most.
I'm just saying.
I cannot wait for the ones coming up because people are just going to be like, Yeah. It's all over there. Majorspoilers.com. It's all over there at majorspoilers.com. You know, we were talking about Elseworlds at the top of the show. It's time to talk about Amalgam once more. As we look at this week, Legends of the Dark Claw and Spider-Boy. And there's one that I like more than the other. And there's one that I like the art in one more than the other.
Yeah.
And, it's Amalgam. What you gonna do? Rodrigo, why don't you give us a quick rundown of what the heck Legends of the Dark Claw is about?
Right. So Legends of the Dark Claw is an Amalgam title. So Dark Claw is a Batman Wolverine hybrid.
Ben Vereen, if you will.
Yes, a Ben Vereen.
Dude, I would die. That would be amazing.
And of course, because it's Batman Wolverine, then his nemesis is a Joker Sabretooth mashup named Hyena, which I think is good. That's clever. I like it. You know, this was definitely at a point in the where like Wolverine was all about stabbing Sabretooth. Like that used to be what Wolverine comics were about. Other stuff happened too, but then Sabretooth would show up, and that's you just like 9 pages in like a 10-page comic would be Wolverine stabbing Sabretooth. In any case, it's very important for this. So this is about Darkclaw fighting Hyena while also the Huntress, who is just called the Huntress. No, she doesn't get a compound name. Is trying to investigate the Hyena, and because they have a shared past, she comes across basically she accidentally figures out Darkclaw's secret identity. And of course, since this is an amalgam book, there's some action, and then it's kind of left on kind of a cliffhanger that is never going to get resolved.
Yeah.
Here's that cliffhanger sucks, by the way.
Oh yeah, Bill Clinton's in this.
Yeah, Bill Clinton is in this. That's right. That's right. That's the most important thing you need to know about this comic. I honestly think that's the most important thing you need to know about this comic.
Actually, the most important thing you need to know about this comic is that it is a Jim Ballant joint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Featuring two female characters who are not smuggling volleyballs under their top.
Yeah, you've got Jubilee and Robin,
which is
being
refreshing.
Smashed together. Mm-hmm. And then you've
right,
got
the Sparrow.
And then you've got Carol Danvers and Huntress mashed together.
Yeah, at this point, Carol Danvers would have been Warbird of the Avengers. And her as the Huntress is actually one of the amalgams that I don't care for. Because it's kind of nonsensical. Because if you're doing a Batman hybrid, she should be a hybrid of Carol Danvers and Catwoman. Because the character is sort of kind of
or
one
even,
of his...
Or even Batgirl.
Right. Someone who's like, you know, well, they're all tied up in Bruce Wayne, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., as we said 5 months ago.
Right.
Mm. But yeah, it doesn't make thematic sense to have the Huntress who, you know,
when this series came out, though, Huntress was like a big player in that Batman universe.
Yeah, but she isn't necessarily. Well,
was she?
Yeah, she really was.
They were trying really hard to make Fetch happen with the Huntress, and while they failed, for good reason, they failed for the exact same reason that I don't like the Huntress in here is that her role never quite seemed to gel. I mean, if we're playing her as this character who is his equal slash maybe romantic partner slash pseudo rival, then the Huntress, who at the time was either Batman's daughter or an unrelated Bat character that Batman actually didn't get along with and kept telling her to stop.
That's the one.
Oh, like spoiler?
Yes.
Yeah. That is what Batman did in the 90s. He told people to, well, no, scratch that. He told women to stop and took 12-year-old boys out to be murdered.
It took him until like 2000 to like punch Dick Grayson in the face in Bruce Wayne Murderer, but that was pretty bad too.
Well, and Dick Grayson did punch back.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got that going for you. And I will say this about the Dark Knight suit. You know how...
The Dark Claw, excuse me.
Thank you for... You know how sometimes when you're drawing something and you're like, this didn't quite come out, so I'm going to noodle it up with some noodly bits to hide the fact that I didn't draw it right? Dark Claw's uniform is all noodly bits.
Oh, it totally is. Except for the cowl, which is kind of neat because it's like Wolverine's big old swoopy ears are the bat wings.
Yes,
and then the mask is like the open. It's just a total bat. It's like he stuck a bat on his head and ripped off the lower jaw and stuck it under his chin.
I do kind of like the hidden bat symbols in his claws. That's kind of neat. Where he has like scalloped claws like Batman's boots and gloves, you know, but it's just noodly. It's all noodly noodles and noodles.
If you asked me, if you were to ask me, Stephen, why were the 90s all about excess? Or can you explain to me 90s comics and excess? I would hand them a copy of Legends of the Dark Claw. Because this is like everything you want to put on a sandwich, but you know better than to put on a sandwich. Yeah. And that's what this book is.
This is really a distillation of, and I will say this, it is incredibly successful in what it is, because it is a distillation of the themes and tropes of a Wolverine solo book circa 1996, smudged all together, the peanut butters and the chocolate, with the tropes and themes of a Batman solo book circa 1996.
I think it's one of the best ones that we've read.
I agree with you.
So
this is my
regardless of whether or not we love all the tropes.
Yeah, this is noodly. of the two, this is the one that has my favorite story, but it also shows the massive excess of both Batman and Wolverine, and really the kind of the problems of what was going on
90s.
During this 90s time period. But it's got Bill Clinton in it too. It was the best of the two stories that I liked. And it's also got this moment where people are firing at Dark Claw, and he jumps into the helicopter, and then they fire these like heat seeking missiles. And the Bat Claw copter is like swerving away, and they're like, just for no reason, hey, why is the SHIELD helicarrier getting out of town so fast? And it's like, okay, it's most to tie into something else, but it's just funny that
cross over to Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, but it's just so funny that you just have this one shot of them avoiding these missiles, and at the same time going, why is the SHIELD helicarrier getting out of here so fast? It's like, okay, guys, come on.
You know what? They were trying to give us a shared universe.
They were trying to give us something.
This issue commits. C-O-M-I-T-T-T-T-T-T.
This is Larry Hama, right? This is writing this one, or is that Spider Boy that he wrote? Yeah, this is Larry Hama of G.I. Joe fame writing this.
And Hama, it feels like a Hama story. Mm-hmm. And knowing and having read as much Hama as I have, I'm a big fan of Hamas. Hamas are really good. It's a Hamas joke. Don't just go with me.
Yeah,
Larry Hama. Yeah. Larry Hama is a really, really good plotter. And Larry Hama does a thing with his stories where, for instance, G.I. Joe 21 is basically 20 pages of nobody talking and Snake Eyes sneaking into a temple. And it works really well. And I feel like this story is Larry Hama steering into the skid and saying, okay, what's a Batman comic like? What's a Wolverine comic like? You take all of that and you get it in there. You get the peanut butter, you get the cheese, you get the salami, you get the hummus.
Like I said earlier, it's like a sandwich you think you want, but you should know better.
I agree. It might be the most successful like encapsulation of an amalgam comic, because not just the action and the gadgets and what each character is about, sort of physically, but also in this story, we have both Wolverine yelling at Jubilee and then Robin being upset that Batman brought a girl into the Batcave.
Yes.
Uh-huh. It's like this is just like such a perfect little box of what Wolverine comics were at the time and what Batman comics were
What was Larry Hama doing at this time? Was he working for DC? Because this, if I'm not mistaken,
Larry was working.
This
for
is the
Marvel,
DC book, right?
Say.
Because Denny O'Neill was the editor on this one. So was he working at Marvel?
I think he was working at DC.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I was just trying to figure out what he was.
Published by Marvel.
Yeah. Oh boy. Let's talk about Spider-Boy.
Let's talk about how much fun Spider-Boy is.
Here's the good thing about Spider-Boy. Mike Waringo.
It looks so good.
It is so good. It has everything in it.
I see at least one person cosplaying as Spider-Boy at every major con I go to.
Here's the problem that I had with Spider-Boy. It spent all its time telling you how these different characters were mashed together.
Yeah, it is all exposition from cover to cover. And it's the thing that I really enjoy about it, and that I like actually better than Legends of the Dark Knight, is it doesn't try to tell a, you know, big giant coherent story. It says, guys, these are my action figures. Guys, check out how cool my action figures are. This is Bizarnage, and this is Dr. Octopus, and this is this. And there's something just so refreshingly cool about this book that is just like, and then this happened, and then
When you dip Spider-Boy in cold water, he turns blonde.
Right.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, It's all exposition. It's like, oh, Reed Richards is evil, but we're not going to have time because Susan Richards is also Ace of the Challengers of the Unknown.
Yeah.
Oh, and Tana Moon is here and she's also Lois Lane or something.
If there was one that was like, hey, I want to read these Amalgam comics for the story, this is one to avoid.
I disagree, actually, because...
Well, I mean, you can disagree. I'm just saying that there is no story here except for suddenly here are all these characters that we've mashed together and we're going to spend a panel or two of their entire, you know, three panel appearance telling you nudge, nudge, wink, wink. This is really Sue Storm meets XYZ character.
Spider-Boy tries to catch the lizard.
Yeah.
Yeah. It depends on whether you think of the story as a series of plotted events or if you think of the story as these are the things that happen in people's lives, because in a lot of ways, this disjointed, wacky issue of Spider-Boy, where he runs through his life and all these crazy things happen, is just kind of that slice of life issue. If this is a first issue, say they were actually making a Spider-Boy comic, and this is the first issue you're going to read, and it's introducing you to everything in this universe, I feel like this is one of the most successful first issue. Here's our players. Here's everything that's going on. There's way too many characters and way too much stuff, and but we're going to commit to it.
Yeah, and that's the problem. There are too many characters, and a good editor would say, hey, you know what? We've got a long run ahead of us. Let's take half these characters out and introduce them later.
Now, a good editor would say, why are these characters here? And accept it if there was a good answer. But I also feel like I think
so what's the good answer?
More successful. I don't know. It's not my comic.
Dr. Octopus is a challenger guy.
This is, to me, a stronger read than Dark Claw for two reasons. One, Dark Claw is another one of the Amalgam titles where they're saying, okay, you're giving us a glimpse into this world that doesn't exist, so it's part of an ongoing narrative. Whereas Spider-Boy really reads like a first issue. It reads like, okay, so you're coming here, and Spider-Boy's going to have his own title, and here's your first day, here's your locker, here's the bathrooms, here's where you get to the cafeteria. The equivalent of all of this stuff, and each little introduction where you're like, God, more guys, then they throw in a little bit where Hank Pym and Ray Palmer are arguing whether enlarging or miniaturization is the way of the future. And the Fantastic Four, who are also
typical men.
Yeah.
It's got to, you know, the Fantastic Four, who are also the Challengers of the Unknown, have their own subplot going on that isn't going to get followed up on because they don't actually have a book. It, to me, is just so... It's so golden agey. It's so throw everything at the wall and see what runs up the flagpole to salute, or however that phrase goes. And I love Spider-Boy and, of course, the sequel Spider-Boy Team Up.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one another time, because I think that was in the second run of the Amalgam stuff,
yeah,
right?
I
think
so.
Yeah. Ashley, what are your thoughts on Spider-Boy? I think it's just too much stuff.
Man, it's mostly based on Connor Kent, who I don't like, which is tough. I think it's so much fun to look at. I think if you're gonna dare to dip your toe in the Amalgam universe, I think it's worth it just to look at the art.
Oh, the art.
And then move right into the Mike Waringo Fantastic Four run.
Yeah, this art is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And then be a diligent voter in the Ringo Awards every year in honor of one of our greatest contributing artists. Yeah, I think it's fun. It's a step above garbage, but it's really fun. In a way that we haven't seen a lot of fun in Amalgam, which is interesting because it should be nothing but
right.
But the writing in it is lacking in a way that it's really everything Dark Claw is not. Dark Claw is a great story with noodly art, as Matthew said.
Noodle.
Yeah. I got to the page where Pete Ross is coming out of the stairwell, and I was like,
oh yeah.
And then he's talking with Lois and everybody, and JJ comes out, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I miss this art so, so much. He was one of my favorite, still is one of my favorite artists. And this is just like, I could just look at, as Ashley said, I could just look at this book again and again and again and again, just for the art, because there's, and so on the plus side of from the art side, there are a lot of characters and you're getting a bunch of characters in here. And so from the art side, this is a grand trip for we're Ringo fans. Yeah, it's just I love this for the art. Rodrigo, thoughts on the Spider Boy?
The Spider Boy. Yeah, there's a lot going on here, but I think, you know, there's kind of two types of Amalgam books, right? You have your books like the Darklaw one and like, say, Amazon, that are like, here's this mostly contained story with maybe a little bit of background for you so you can tell what's going on. And then there's the like, we're just going to plug you right into this narrative. Like, this is issue 6 of 238.
I hate like, those ones. I hate them.
Spider-Boy strikes probably the best balance between the two, where it's not just like that JLX thing that we read, where it was right. Like, what at any point in any panel is happening,
yeah,
you guys.
Yeah.
Whereas this, you know, there's a lot, you know, plenty of dialogue that's like, oh, hi, wink, wink, nudge, hi, the Atom guy. Hi, Ant-Man guy. Hi, Dr. Octopus guy. I'm going to go catch the lizard. Hey, Pete, are you going off to catch the lizard? Well, yes, I am, Sue Storm analog. I'm heading on my way out. But first, I'm going to go to the Daily Bugle and like shake hands with literally every amalgamated character in the Daily Bugle. And it's like, okay, now I finally caught the lizard. Boo, he shrunk. Like, you know.
Just, yeah. Yep.
That's 200% what this is. And it's joyous to me just to see that, because the fun in an amalgam title for me is, who are you amalgamating? How many people can you amalgamate? And are you going to amalgamate everybody? Because I think they really missed an opportunity in never having Aunt May amalgamated with Martha Washington. No, not Martha Washington, Martha Wayne.
Martha Kent.
Yeah, Martha Kent, Martha Wayne.
Martha Washington, though.
Martha Washington would be great.
I'd read the ever-loving hell out of that. DC Marvel can hire me at any time.
You know who they should have? Who they should have amalgamated is Aunt May and Amanda Waller.
Yeah.
Like,
how
yes.
How do you write that?
Aunt Mayfly.
Viciously.
And she comes in and she's like, but yeah.
She's like super super sweet when she is at home, right? Just the right. Nicest. Let me make you some wheat cakes. Let me check your temperature and do your laundry. And then after Pete goes to bed and she closes her bedroom door, there's like a slash of light across her eye and you can see her eyes narrow and she's on the phone. Give me the secret 6 now. Oh, she'd be just like
actually,
evil.
That would be good, especially if you had some stuff where we're dealing with her and she's like, our number one priority is to catch whoever this Spider Boy is.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes,
you know, it's like, we need to put a tracking device on him and explode his brain if he gets out of line. And then she finds out that it's Peter, right?
Yep.
Shocker.
Oh. Yep.
But Peter now has a bomb in his brain and it's all her fault.
But she's totally like total evil whenever she's, you know, doing her job, but total sweetness whenever she's out in public.
In a lot of ways for me, Amalgam is like karaoke. And there's a place to do a subtle karaoke. I mean, if you're doing like Anne Murray karaoke, you can subtle it up and you can do a really good, you know, a perfect Anne Murray analog. And that, I think, is Legends of the Darkclaw. And then there's also karaoke where you're doing a Tenacious D song and you have to just throw yourself into it because that's telekinesis, Kyle. And I feel like for me, and again, mileage varies. Steven and I, you know, we butt heads, but I respect him. You know, it's fine. He's not wrong in saying that The Dark Knight has a stronger and more coherent story. But I feel like there's just something about that faucet that's way too fast, running just chunks of amalgams and ideas shooting you in the face. And it's like you're going down the water slide, to get into a metaphor in the middle of my metaphor. And you get to the bottom and you're like, and also the lizard is technically King Shark. And it took me years to figure out that the lizard is technically King Shark, because I'm like, well, why are they calling him King Lizard?
I didn't even get that. I thought it was one of like the subterranean lizards that Superman used to fight. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And they made a Fin Fang Foom joke in there. And I'm like, is he Fin Fang Foom? Is the king thing a Fin Fang Foom Fing Fang Foo thing? But, you know, there is a point where I prefer something that is just honestly, gregariously loud and in your face and kind of enthusiastic and goofy and almost puppy like in its flapping around and doing all these cool things that we do, to the Legends of the Dark Knight story, which is really kind of subtle, but just has moments in it where I'm like, well, how is this different than, you know, just a Batman book? How is it not just a Wolverine?
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying earlier, that if you wanted to say what were the 90s about with excess and everything, here's Batman and here's Wolverine combined together. This tells you everything you need to know about this era of comics in one place.
And that is less fun to me than,
well,
just people.
No, and then I'm not saying it. I didn't say it has to be fun. I'm just saying this is what comics was about in the 90s. And Superboy, you know, it's just got too much. That's the only thing. It's like, I've got a nice scoop
that's
of ice
also
cream.
What comics were like.
Yeah, that's also a problem. Yeah, I've got a scoop of ice cream, and then I'm just going to cover it with every topping at the toppings bar. And
let's do that.
No, let's not. You really need. It's not good for you.
Get the chocolate and the vanilla.
No, is bad
those
for you.
Orange slices.
I like Reese's cups, pieces.
Yes.
And
peanut
like
butter and oranges.
Chips,
peanut butter and oranges. Coconut. That's what Spider Boy is. But boy, does it look pretty.
Peanut
boy,
butter
does it
and
look
oranges
pretty.
Are good.
No, it's not.
Much.
Ashley, final thoughts on these two books, please.
Read them. They're fun. They're totally fun in different ways. And then when you read them together, you get good story and good art.
There you go. That's why I said one had a better story and one had better art. Rodrigo, final thoughts on these two books, please.
Yeah, I think if you pair up all the books that we've read so far, because we've been doing two at a time,
mm-hmm.
these two might be the best pair, just because generally speaking, the stories are okay, and they give you enough backstory to be like, okay, yeah, okay, up to speed. Oh, the comic's over. Good.
That's a good way to summarize that. The comics are over. Good.
Yeah, and the art is pretty good in both of them. I actually like the Dark Claw art just fine. I thought it was fine. So yeah, this might be the best pair of Amalgam comics we've reviewed so far.
And that may be why those two specifically come back as those titles in their next run. Matthew, final thoughts.
I actually agree. I think that overall, the sets that we have done have been very much uneven. And finally, we have two books that are both solid in different ways. I think that of the Amalgam episodes we have done, this is the most successful overall pair of reads, because always previously, there's one book where you're just like, what? How is Steve Trevor the Punisher again, you guys? That's not an Amalgam. That's just stupid. And, you know, you have your moments where, yes, both of these books can throw you out and have you going, okay, they're putting too much in it, or they're trying too hard, or they're not trying hard enough in the case of, you know, Carol Danvers literally just putting on the Huntress's clothes. But I feel like both of these are solid, and it may be because they are the top books. I mean, this is Spider-Man, this is Wolverine, this is Batman, this is also Superboy, who's technically a Superman title, so it's kind of the top thing. These feel like the books that they put the most care into, and I feel like these, if you had to read just one Amalgam book, I'm going to tell you to go get Spider-Boy.
Mm. We do have another pairing still coming up this year, Super Soldier and X-Patrol. Ooh. Good thing is you can wait until December for that. In the meantime,
remember how we said they've been out of balance and one's good and one's bad?
Oof,
stay tuned.
Oof. In the meantime, no show next week. No show next week because we record on Tuesdays, and next Tuesday is Halloween. And you don't want either any of us to every 5 minutes say, hold on, got to go answer the door, or hear a ding-dong in the background.
Children don't come to my home.
Well, no, they can't get up the stairs.
That's true.
Yes. So we will be off
Ashley
next week.
Ashley lives on a 23rd floor walk-up.
We will be off next week, but we will return the week after for the Sixth Gun Volume 7. I want to thank all of you for downloading and listening and being part of the Major Spoilers experience. And thank you, Matthew. And thank you, Ashley. And thank you, Rodrigo, for being a part of the show again this week. And we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk the Sixth Gun, because we know that you love comics. And we do, too. And we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books, or I'll kill you. I don't care if the Hulk could defeat the Man of Steel. I'm
bring back Kraven. And I don't care if Spider-Man's a clone. Stop spending all our cash on back issues of The Flash, or I swear to God you're gonna spend your twilight years alone.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.